Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
I've got really weirdly fluctuating body temperature. Quite often, I'll be the hottest guy in the room.
No. Genuinely, I will be the guy who's feeling the hottest
in the room.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the most devilishly handsome. For example, I went to the dentist recently, and she was like, put some bloody
hat.
She was like, put some bloody clothes on, mate.
Can you take your balaclava off? I'm finding it a bit difficult to negotiate my way through. Keep getting fibres on my toothpick.
I was wearing a t-shirt, and she's like, "You're not cold." I was like, "No, my body temperature's just—it's quite often different from what everyone else is feeling body temp-wise." I had it in a Chinese restaurant as well. I was in a t-shirt, and everyone else was wearing several layers.
What's going on there then?
Food for thought, isn't it?
Welcome to Extra Beans.
If you've just signed up for the Patreon and this is your first one, you'll be feeling that you've made a good decision. In fact, you're probably kicking yourself for waiting this long.
No, I tell you when I had it badly, was working in a cafe, and I got in an argument with some people about the temperature in the room. I can't be bothered to tell the story because it's quite long, but I'll tell it another time.
With some paying customers.
Some paying customers.
With some colleagues.
I was the only, basically, long story short, there was four people in this cafe upstairs. I was the only one who was boiling. Everyone else was freezing. And we got into a war over which windows were open or not. So I wanted all the windows open. Didn't help that one of these guys was from New Zealand, where obviously he's used to a hotter temperature. Or in a hotter temperature, yeah.
And both. Well, both.
Well, both. It's got everything there.
It's the miracle of New Zealand.
That is why... It's such a great holiday option. You can be skiing in the morning.
You ski straight into a penguin. And onto a banana boat.
You can be skiing in the morning, make friends with the penguin. That night, you and the penguin are both snorkeling together. Later
sipping
on.
Sipping pina coladas.
A romantic dinner, overlooking the bay. And what happens after midnight? That's up to you and the penguin. But think about it as a holiday option.
Yeah, they had trouble condensing that down into a pithy slogan, didn't they? And just went with, "Wanna fuck a penguin?"
They boiled it down, didn't they? That. Also, can I say, if you are trying to chat up a penguin in New Zealand, don't go for the... If you don't make your opening line, "Were you an extra in Lord of the Rings?" They're bored of that. They are so bored of that. And most of them were.
They were the dwarves, weren't they? They just stuck beards to all the penguins. I don't even think they got penguins in New Zealand.
They got penguins in New Zealand.
Have they?
They got penguins in New Zealand, all right.
Penguins.
Really?
Yeah, they got penguins, all right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. In zoos or in the wild?
In Diamond Harbour.
Diamond Harbour.
There's fucking penguins everywhere, mate. Oh, Jesus.
Wait a minute. You mean I haven't been secretly fucking a penguin for all these years? No, that's not a penguin. It's Peter Gwynn.
It's your cousin.
Also works as a silver service waiter.
So Paul Gwynn's been robbing Peter Gwynn to fuck Paul.
That was during
Welcome
the right
to extra beans.
That was during the writer's strike. That episode of Diamond Harbour.
Oh Christ!
There's going to be another big Hollywood writer's strike, isn't there? I think
is there?
Next year.
Is
there? Yeah, and they're saying that it's going to be another weird period where all of your favourite TV shows go crap when they're suddenly written by the CEO of Paramount or whatever. And yeah. And it'll go weird. And also,
it's just Derek Jacobi and The Rock improvising.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But apparently
dross.
The last time this happened, it was the birth of loads of reality television shows because they couldn't make drama because the writers were striking. So that's when they started making like At Home with the Osbournes or like, you know, those kind of like quite foundational, quite crap reality shows.
Yeah, Kardashians.
So I was reading a thing which was like, yeah, what's going to come out of this writer's strike? Like, what weird TV format is going to take the place of prestige drama?
Cue naysayers. It's all there. They've got the huge Winkleman face ready to go. They've had that sitting in mothballs for a decade because they know it's just waiting for the right format. The spinning Winkle face.
Yeah. And if you're going to make a studio floor out of cashmere, then you do need to protect it in the right stuff if you're putting it in storage.
Exactly. Yeah. That's true. It's very, very true.
Also, the Al Fuckers TV thing might finally come off for you and Eamon Holmes and Gabby Roslin.
Yes. Unfortunately, bad news from the front, I'm afraid. Things are very toxic between us now.
The three of you.
But yeah, I always thought that gave you the edge. I thought that's part of the magic. It's like the police getting into fistfights before they go on stage, you know?
But at the moment, Eamon Holmes won't talk to either me or Gabby unless it's through an interpreter.
Right. Okay. What languages does the interpreter speak?
Well, that's the problem because we speak the same language.
Mm. Owl.
Owl. It's very hard to find out. Well, a good owl interpreter these days is willing to translate something to and from owl at the same time.
So they're translating it from English into owl and then back into English again.
Yeah.
Which is always going to cause errors, isn't it?
It's always going to cause errors.
That's tricky.
Especially because owls only have 14 words.
Mm. Yeah. And 13 of those are kill and the last one's mice. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry that's the case. Well, do you think this could be the time for the Three Bean Salad Hollywood takeover? You know, we could finally get our American TV series that we've been building towards.
The post-apocalyptic one?
Yeah, the post-apocalyptic game show with Three Bean Salad.
Yeah.
Yeah. The heartwarming post-apocalyptic kitchen sink game show.
The only game show to combine general knowledge trivia and cannibalism.
And the directing work of Ken Loach. Right, so this is Extra Beans. Yeah. Thank you so much for signing up to the Patreon.
Thank you.
Massive thank you.
These are extra bits that we recorded during the recording sessions for the previous four episodes. Mm. And of course, we started off talking about...
animal husbandry.
That's right.
And you might have thought that we'd exhausted that topic on the original episode, but as you're about to see, we had quite a lot more to say about it.
It's almost as if the first husbandry was just a temporary thing, and now it's time to embark on your second husbandry, or being married to... Cut that.
But you're still maintaining a good relationship with the first...
Husbandry. Yeah, you're still made, but you're enjoying, and the second one is a bit shorter. Shorter, isn't it?
Shorter? Yeah.
Well,
you've done the classic thing where you've gone for a shorter model.
I love that. Midlife crisis. Just a bit tall. Just want a guy who's easier to travel on coaches with.
Anyway, here you go. Animal husbandry. Husbandry is based on the idea that, you know, thousands of years ago, we looked at four or five animals and thought, let's domesticate these ones.
Mm-hmm.
So we went for cow, horse, pig. Mm-hmm.
Tortoise.
Sheep.
And alpaca. Medieval alpaca.
But I guess my question is, could, if somebody put their mind to it, just be like, right, I'm domesticating a crocodile. Like, can you domesticate anything, is my question.
Oh, that's interesting.
And why don't we just pick a new one?
Basically, you can only really domesticate an animal once you can get it into a cute little jumper with holes for the arms and legs.
Mm. That's when you know you've done
it. But it's one of those things where it's like, is that a symptom of domesticating an animal? Or is it the cause of domesticating it? And I personally don't want to be the guy to work that out with an alligator. Do you know what I mean? It's like, will it be domesticated once you've got it on, or will having it on domesticate it? No, what's an animal that's not been domesticated yet?
A leopard.
Well, there's something we've got in Britain, an otter. Have we got otters in Britain?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we've got otters, yeah.
If you're trying to domesticate an otter...
And what are we hoping to get out of it in the end? It's eggs?
No. Well, you want to get into a jumper, but also...
Was it a beast of burden carrying tiny carts full of coal around the place?
No, what you want to get out of it, Ben, is to be the first person to patent otter domestication, to start a huge pet craze of otters, and to you, for you to get money every time someone buys an otter.
So it's pets?
It's pets, I think, yeah.
Okay.
Rather than a creature that can pull along a tiny barge.
That's a nice idea.
That stuff. That is quite a cute idea. But the trouble is, basically, you might get close to domesticated one, but there's a good chance at some point that otter's going to turn on you and swipe your head off. and that takes a while to get out. Because you need to get these people that get very close to bears and killer whales and all kinds of animals and tigers and lions, and they appear to have domesticated them. But there's that sense at any point. You know, you'll see some person with like has got a pet lion and they're kind of cuddling it and stuff. And
you're just waiting for that news update.
You just click and refresh, click and refresh, click and refresh. At some point, that photo is going to be replaced with something saying, in memory of, but he told you so. Yeah.
But what would happen to the otter physically? Would it change? Because your cows, they got smaller, right? Starting from auroch.
I think they got bigger.
Did they get bigger?
Starting from rabbit? London foxes have got really gross tails.
So they're using the wrong products, whereas our Devon ones, they don't use any products at all. This pared down life, they just, you know, they clean it with wild swimming. That's how they do it.
Wild swimming.
That's the best way of doing skincare and tail care.
That's
hair care.
And they're just flushed with endorphins. And obviously that wild swimming, you know, they've got loads of vitamin D. They're outdoors.
50-mile cycle through Dartmoor once a week.
So great for the mental health.
And then just two bags of dog turd when you get home. And then,
yeah. Just two bags. Two bags of fresh, you know, as fresh as possible, that dog turd. And that can be a huge sort of beige beast from the arse of a large Alsatian, or it could be some dainty little chihuahua pellets.
Oh yeah, could be a little cockapoo poo number two.
That's
be that, you know, mini little, you know, little snack.
Yeah, but that variety is super important. Obviously, the urban foxes are eating a lot of that poo they're eating isn't actually fresh. You know,
a lot of it's not dog.
A lot of it's not dog. Also, sometimes is it actually poo?
No. It's just a bit of London that's sloughed off onto the streets. I saw the boldest fox I've ever seen in London quite recently.
Oh, yeah.
I was walking down Whitehall. I had no business there. I was just, you know, happened to be a strolling. Yeah. And it was on those little bits of green outside what I did. It might have been quite near the Welsh office, I think.
Green Park? Is that Whitehall?
No, it was as in just a tiny bit of lawn outside one of the big buildings.
Oh, wow.
And it was just there, sort of scratching its chin in its balls,
yeah,
and would periodically just stop and just stare. And people were coming very close to it, you know, sort of a metre and a half away, just stood its ground, just stared them down.
And do you know what? If that fox was actually running the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, maybe as the Foreign Minister, we'd be better off than the current lot we've got in there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, ouch.
And frankly...
Snap.
Frankly, I'd be quite happy if we had a foreign secretary who was actually who was themselves eating shit rather than shoveling it on all of our plates to eat in the form of a lot of their policies these days.
Very spicy.
Yeah. Now, so Mike, obviously you were in central London. Obviously, whenever you're in London, you like to visit the seat of our democracy, don't you? And visit the great institutions, to walk up and down Whitehall, the Mall.
Well, it's visit that or visit you. Yes, I should say.
Just another freezing cold day
outside Defra.
I choose to read the plaques rather than go and get a cup of coffee at Henry's.
There was no other way of getting home. There was no Ubers. That's something I hardly ever do now, which is get an old-fashioned black cab.
Oh, because you hate those guys, right?
I absolutely hate those guys.
Mm. Mate, do you want to use a map? No. It's all in here. Yeah, is it really, though?
Yeah.
All in here. Okay, but you could just use a sat-nav, couldn't you?
Yeah.
And then we would definitely get to where we're going.
Yeah.
No. I learned this completely pointless trick 50 years ago, so I've got to keep doing it forever.
Because I don't actually live in Aberdeenshire, but no, carry on. So true. You've got to protect their ego. You get in the car, because I live in a very tiny road that no cab driver's heard of, and there's no way.
Yeah.
But you can't, if you start telling them, like, no, you're all right, even where you live, they want to deduce it now, because they're having to compete with Uber. So they won't actually let you say where you're going now. They're trying to deduce it.
trying to. Well, they just pick up on your demeanour and try and work it out.
Yeah. They use sort of Sherlock Holmes sort of skills.
It's sort of Pygmalion you, based on your voice and your mannerisms.
You know what happened? You know what? That's just reminded me of the other time I took a taxi, the time before that I took a taxi. I was hideously late for something. So I never take back taxis, but I was hideously late. And again, there was no Ubers because Uber seems to have disappeared, basically. And I was going to miss my train and stuff. And then this black taxi appeared out of nowhere. It was like a miracle. And I hailed him, got in. I said, can you take me to King's Cross or wherever it was? And he went, yeah. He went, yeah, fine. As long as you don't mind me eating. And then he indicated to between his legs he had a curry in a small he had a little sort of metal tray with a curry in it between his legs, and I just went absolutely fine, yeah. So he ate a curry as he drove me to the station.
So he'd finished his poppadoms already. He got through that.
He finished the poppadoms, and he had
you had to hold his peshwari naan.
I held the rotating metal pickle bowl, you know, the pickle bowls on the little
90 degrees to the left, yeah, 180 degrees, yeah. Need a line.
But he had an unfortunate habit of driving, doing what he was doing with the steering, whatever he was telling me to do, he would do with the steering wheel automatically. So we did quite a lot of handbrake turns because he said rotate the pickles 180. Oh, sorry, not me. And I go, no, turn right. And he went, what? The mango chutney, that's on the right. And I went, no, the car right. And then there's a lot of, and then right you are. And he's like, turn right. No, the mango chutney right. What? It was absolutely, it was chaos.
And then he slammed into a wall instead of an airbag, a huge pillowy naan.
That's right.
Out of the steering wheel.
That's right. And obviously I was in charge of the sort of, drinks and sort of bringing him. He got through about nine pints of
Cobra.
Kingfisher. It was Kingfisher he went for.
It's one or the other, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a seasoned driver. If just the risk of just popping a Sanger down your gob isn't enough, if you've moved all the way to Curry.
Yeah, he was definitely confident. It wasn't his first day on the job, I'm telling you that.
When I was in Rio, I got a taxi ride off a guy who was watching a soap opera on a mini television as he drove us. Absolutely fantastic. That's wonderful. Then, of course, we covered the topic of board games. But I'll tell you what we weren't bored of. Talking about board games. So there's more board games chat.
Very nice, Ben.
Lovely.
Very nice.
Actually, this episode, I think, is the one where we stayed on topic. I think entirely for the entire thing.
Amazing. It was pretty breathtaking, wasn't it?
Yeah. With no tangents whatsoever. And I think, and I can't remember, but I think even this extra stuff is all on topic.
That's quite extraordinary.
We were like laser focused. I think it was the best one we've had us sent in.
You know what we're a bit like? Someone that set their challenge, their thing, to be walking across a tightrope between two quite tall buildings.
And it turned out their skill was falling between two buildings.
Yeah, and so what they were really good at was falling between two buildings. And then weird, a bit like a stop clock takes
Going faster.
Better stop clock.
It's the only way.
A bit like a stop clock tells the right time twice a day.
Yes.
Once in a blue moon.
He was going to get it right eventually, wasn't he? In the same way that a stop clock.
In the same way
right
that
twice a day.
It's a bit like they say that, isn't it, with the phrase "the stop clock tells." A bit they say that, don't they, with the phrase "a bit like a stop clock tells the right time twice a day." Oh, I know. I've done it twice. Better stop for the rest of the day. But occasionally, once in a while, we'll actually make it across the tightrope. And it's a bit sort of, in a way, on one hand, it's really good. On the other hand, it's like, hang on a minute, what we've been watching the rest of the time? hang on a minute. We've just been watching some people falling off a rope for... But anyway.
So yeah, whether you like watching us fall off a rope or successfully traversing the gap between two buildings, here comes more board games chat.
I tell you what, in lockdown, a lot of people got into board games, and I think it helped drive this recent sort of craze in them. And I got the one which a lot of people talked about, which is called Train Hub or something.
Oh God, Ticket to Ride.
Awful. What is that?
Ticket to Ride.
So I'm interested in this. I've never played it, but I'd like to.
I have got a pretty much virgin, untouched Ticket to Ride set burning a hole in my cupboard. And I've seen the accruing value, so I could offer you just slightly more than cover what I paid for it. So I'm not looking to make a lot of
plus
money.
Plus postage and packing.
Plus postage and packing.
It sounds deadly dull.
It's about building train networks across Europe, right?
Yes, oh, essentially.
Hang on. No, nope,
here we
I'm
go.
Interested.
Hang on.
You're quite
a minute.
Swift to.
Let's turn it around.
Yeah. Basically, the problem I had with it was, I think I liked the idea of a board game more than the reality. When we unboxed it, was it's the rules. I mean, I think a lot of people fall down here. Certainly, I do. When you're reading through the rules, and it's like, I'm in pain now. Why am I in pain? Like, life is hard. This is already, and I can't do it.
Yeah.
This is worse than a lot of my problems that I have in life, what's happening right now. So why am I... Do you know what I mean?
Like, it's very dispiriting to fail a comprehension exercise at any age, isn't it? At any age, if someone says, exactly. Do you understand this? No.
Yeah.
You are. There's something wrong with you.
No.
And you will never thrive.
I'm not good enough.
It's the it's the sort of Christmas family version of the 11 plus, basically.
Yeah. In nature, you would be, quite simply, you would be picked off by a wolf.
and probably a training wolf as well.
A training wolf.
Not even one of the hardcore alphas.
Not a top wolf.
No.
You'd be picked off.
You'd be their first kill.
But because of society, we will have to feed and clothe you. But dems is de breaks.
Henry, you can't add a buffet car at this stage of the game. You haven't yet got from steam to electric railway. What are you doing?
You're not in the buffet era. The technology to vacuum pack a slice of fruitcake has simply not been invented yet.
Oh, you're going to microwave a cheese and ham slice, are you, Henry?
In 1911? At Krakow train station? I don't think so.
To be honest, it reminded me of the level of stress that I get when trying to buy an actual rail ticket and work out if it's off-peak, if I should be going for a peak one or not, and whether or not the return can be an open return or with will that...
It's the return that's the stressful bit. Will you be able to return or will there be a surprise fee of £475 for your 17-mile journey?
Because I'm using a different rail provider.
Yeah, because you're wearing a different T-shirt, whatever it might be.
Yeah, because I find that quite stressful. Mm. In fact... Recently, I took a real train.
Someone's earning.
I just wanted to slip that in. Some people do the board game. I prefer the real thing.
You built a length of the railway track.
Yeah, from my house to my local garage, yeah. So rather than taking a four-minute stroll, it takes about an hour and a half.
I had an awkward thing yesterday where, it's so awkward. There's a postal strike this week, right?
Mm.
So I needed to order my partner's birthday present. I realised there was going to be a strike. So I paid for special delivery so it would arrive yesterday.
Nice.
So as not to be involved in the strike.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't arrive yesterday.
Oh, no.
And the postman came by and I just said to him, oh, I ordered this thing, special delivery. Have you got it in your van? Because if not, it's not going to arrive on time. Had a look in the van. It wasn't there. So I was a bit annoyed. But at the same time, I wanted to be cool about the fact that they're striking this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I support the strikes. So, you know, I couldn't be like, oh, fuck it. So I was like, oh, and you won't be able to deliver it tomorrow, will you? Because you're striking. And he was like, yep. And I wasn't sure what to say.
Mm.
So I just said the word. Solidarity. It was such an odd moment.
Solidarność.
It was such an odd moment in my life.
Please tell me you put your fist in the air as well.
Solidarity. He looked at me so bizarre. He gave me the wind.
I mean, that... It couldn't have been more ambiguous, could it? What you did with that word, you said, I'm engaging with this topic area. But you're not... Because you could have been, if you were to take the minutes of that conversation, you'd just see the word solidarity. You'd say, Ben says solidarity. But you could have meant it in a kind of,
Solidarity. Solidarity, I suppose. Or you could have meant solidarity.
Mm. Or a distant academic, I'm witnessing a social phenomenon here. Solidarity. Hello.
Do you remember how you said it, Ben, what your tone was?
Did you commit to it?
No, that's
the
problem.
Did you stand on top of his van and scream it into the air?
I think I realised I was saying it about halfway through and then lost confidence. So it probably would have sounded like this. Solidarity.
And scuttled back into your...
As if you were going into a tunnel or something. Yeah. And also you could have meant solidarity with...
the bosses.
The Tory government. Against the likes of
you, with the landowners.
With the landowners.
Yes. Oh, well. It's something for him to think about on the picket line, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep. I'm sure it'll warm his heart. Chess?
Chess. Chess is something, yeah. Chess is something I've had to learn and relearn a number of times. I've certainly not got no game in chess.
Can I reveal to you that I was an unpicked squad member of the Wales under-12s chess?
Here we go, Bonjamin all over again. Here we go.
team.
Why were you unpicked? Because of your...
rubbish at chess. Absolutely awful at chess.
Or was it because of your unethical approach to the game?
I was just there for morale, really. No, I got put in the squad and then just never picked. Which is pretty upsetting.
But were you there as a sub? Were you ready? Do you have to be there on the sides, did you?
No, I just didn't get to go to any of the tournaments. I was on paper in the squad, never went to anything.
So in the there's the chess hierarchy on the one hand, but there's also the dweeb hierarchy on the other hand.
Yeah.
Do you go higher or lower up the dweeb hierarchy through not being included in the...
Oh.
It's interesting. Interesting one to think about.
Yeah, and playing Chess International is pretty dweeby, isn't it?
Hmm. But is it actually less dweeby than playing? I don't know. I mean, I mean,
it's a very dreamy world.
Have you heard about this case recently where a professional chess player in tournaments...
Had a vibrating butt plug?
No. I think he's been accused of having...
What?
I think it was...
Have I made that up?
No, wasn't it chess... I think he had chess pieces up his arse, so he was pulling out extra pawns.
he had the equivalent of an ace up your sleeve?
Yeah, like it was like he's got two kings. He's unbeatable. Arse. This guy's got two kings. He's got one's really, really smelly. He's got one really smelly king and another king.
How do you get it out and put it on the board without anyone noticing that you're pulling it out of your anus?
That's years of work, isn't it? Years of practice.
It's years of practice. That
no, he
that
had is. A he had a butt plug.
Oh, was it a butt plug that was vibrating?
That someone else was vibrating to give him tips. Really? I think.
But why doesn't the guy who's doing that just play the game? He sounds like he must be really good. That guy.
Yeah, that's such a good point.
Also, no one likes backseat cooking, for example. I don't like or backseat anything, backseat driving. You know, someone telling you what to do, even if it's not through the medium of a vibrator up your ass, is annoying. How annoying would that be?
I assume that somebody was using a computer to look up the next best move, then transmitting it via vibrating butt plug.
I assume this sort of backseat chess maneuver is that's by his invitation, though, isn't it? I mean, when you get backseat. Cooking, backseat driving, there's no invitation, which is why there's nothing, no one's put anything up your arse.
Oh, that's true. He would have been complicit, you'd think, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Also, how specific could you get instructions to be just through vibration like that? How would it work?
I guess Morse code?
So you'd have a different pattern for each plate, for each...
Or maybe he sort of hovered his hand over different pieces, and then if he was over the right one, it would really go for broke.
Was that the what they did with Who Wants to be a Millionaire, with that
Major Charles Ingram, the coughing major.
Oh, yes.
Because he coughed. Did he cough when...
No, he didn't cough. He was playing Who Wants to be a Millionaire, and then his friend Tequin Whittock...
Oh, well remembered.
Wow.
Tequin Whittock.
Would cough when the answer was correct. But again, the question was always, like you say, Henry, why isn't Tequin Whittock playing?
Why is Tequin Whittock? Who are these people, these weird vicarious sort of... quiz players, gamers. Well, just do it yourself.
These backseat thrill seekers. Chess, I don't know. I think chess might have saved my... Being very bad at chess might have saved my life on one occasion when I was in Jordan, in Ajlan, and I managed to sort of misjudge it so there was no accommodation anywhere at all. And I was just...
Hang on, Henry, are we podcasting with Indiana Jones?
That's right.
I think we are.
I was standing in the middle of this town as dusk was falling, and there was just nothing there. Nothing. There was no, you know, I was just in a sort of small bit of the village where there was. I just naffed up, basically. There's no accommodation, no food, nothing. And it was. I knew it was going to get freezing cold overnight.
And what were you disguised as?
I was disguised as a first century gladiator.
Nice.
Yeah, one of the ones with the net. Nice. And the spear. And this old man sort of beckoned me over to invite me to play chess, basically, outside his house. And I was so laughably crap at it that he was tickled pink and was just laughing at me the whole time. And by the end of it, I think he warmed me and invited me to stay in his house and break bread with him.
That's amazing. Interestingly, that's another...
I've beaten him.
It's another chess story which ends with a vibrating butt plug, doesn't it?
As so many of them do.
Which you woke up with, didn't you, the next day? You've never managed to dislodge.
He was able to direct me with that butt plug. So I was headed in the right direction.
Like a chess piece, in fact.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. A knight's move to Umkais and off to my next Roman castle. Lovely.
My fear with chess is that, well, on the one hand, I think in terms of board games, what I like is a board game with simple rules, but the game is, the game can be complicated or not. Well, I don't like having to wade through rules. I just, so the chess is that, simple rules.
Yeah.
And checkers. There was a game called Othello that I used to love.
I love Othello.
Oh, yeah.
That's Othello.
Yeah, brilliant. That's a consistent hit in the household.
In fact, I don't know if its motto used to be, it still is. Was it like a moment to learn, a lifetime to master?
No, we've talked about this past. That's the Chinese game Go.
Getting into Go again. Yeah. Don't go down that road again, Henry, whatever you do.
Yeah, because also it's definitely not true of Othello, that in that you don't keep playing it for your whole lifetime. I mean, it's quite good, but you give up about the age of 13. Yeah. and you don't tend to return to it, unlike Uno, the card game. Which
Mike, I've got a board game that I think your family would enjoy if you're in the mood for them.
Mm.
It's called Blockus. Blockus. That's just a genuine recommendation.
All right, cheers. I'll look it up.
It's great.
Is that simple to learn?
Very simple to learn.
Mm.
Also simple to master. That's the problem.
That's fine. Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah.
Is it a sort of spatial, sort of square, cutting off squares, joining up squares kind of game?
Yes, it's exactly that. It's basically like you have different... It's a bit like Tetris, but on a board, I guess.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, oh, it's good.
I mean, we do love blocking off squares, don't we, and joining up squares. Those two concepts. Sort of.
It's the simplest way we can order the chaos.
Yeah.
We've actually talked about board games, amazingly.
Yeah, good point. This is one of the most on-topic times we've ever had.
Yeah.
We've had an email from Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Pompidou discount email.
Ah.
It's been a while since we've added a new venue that offers the Pompidou discount.
Yeah.
But we've got a new one. She's the manager of a Ferris wheel.
Ooh. Wow. Wow, that's good.
She says, I'm willing to offer a free ride to any listeners brave enough to come to our ticket box and use the code words Bean is Wheel.
Okay. Brave enough.
As a travelling amusement, by the time you get around to reading this, I cannot be certain about our location. So I'm unable to be any more specific, but you can find us spinning away somewhere along the east coast of Australia. Good luck.
Ooh.
Challenge accepted.
Wow.
So it's a travelling
Ferris wheel.
Fun fair.
There's no guarantee that you're gonna bean his wheel to the right Ferris wheel manager.
No.
Gosh, the stakes are pretty high, aren't they? Because you could look at an absolute chump.
But I think that's the true spirit of the Pompidou discount. Mm. Is there's a bit of there's gotta be a bit of risk.
You could look like a boob.
Yeah.
I mean, because you could end up in a situation where you have to hear the words, sorry, I don't know what you mean, mate.
Yeah, it's just imagine.
Yeah. I mean, how bad would that be? But,
get the fuck off this fucking Ferris wheel.
Get out of this cunt.
Get the fuck out of this wheel. Or I will press the panic button that summons Russell Crowe and I will fucking do it.
You want to spin on that? Spin on this.
Do you think the Ferris wheel gets around Australia by just wheeling just on its
Do you know what I mean? By just pushing it.
Yeah, well, how else, hey?
How else?
It's time to go to a new town. They just let it off its axis and it just goes.
They let off its axis and just let it go.
Yeah. And where it settles, that's the new spot.
It's weird. I don't think of Australia as being a place that has fun fairs, because I think of it as a place which is just so full of natural wonder that everywhere you look, there's like a croc. There's a spider the size of a croc. there's a soap star riding a croc. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so full of natural wonders and amazing things that the idea that you'd have to be there, and also why would you need a Ferris wheel? If you live in Britain, everything's quite bland and average. So you need a Ferris wheel to get some excitement back in your life. Because I'm sorry, but just looking at the Chiltern Hills isn't going to get my blood racing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know that they're nice hills, but you don't get an adrenaline buzz in the Chilterns. Have you ever been also, to the Chilterns?
You're not going to, in the Chilterns, you're not going to be pulled down by a wild dog. A dingo is not going to
exactly
suddenly tear you to pieces in the middle of your ramble.
Yeah.
So it's all very low risk, not exciting.
Yeah. In the Chilterns, you won't have someone say to you, look, what's that behind you? It's a wazza bazza. And you look around and it's a spider the size of a car with your exact face.
Yeah. And the same number plate as your car.
And your last thought is, how the hell did that evolve? But before you've even had that thought, it's got two sort of fleshy straws stuck in your face and sucking your eyes out. And you're like, God, surprisingly sort of cheerful name, Fuzza Wuzza, for this thing. It's like, fucking horrible.
I'm having a nightmare, eh?
They should have called it a gitter witter. That's wasted.
I wish I was on a Ferris wheel, actually.
Nice. At a safe height. From the Wuzza Wuzza.
Maybe that's what it is.
Tell you what, I could really... It's just so they can finally relax for a bit. Yeah. Yeah. They can actually lower their adrenaline levels by getting
just
on
for 8 sweeping seconds. That's it, and then the adrenaline pump as they come to ground level. It's just the adrenaline soars once again because they're back in they're in clutching range of the beasts. Get me back up to the top,
no, God, please.
Yeah.
Of course, that lowering of adrenaline is ill-founded because there are, of course, flying giant fruit bats, which will grab your tail bollocks off before we.
The wibbly nozzles. The wibbly nozzles will get you at the top of the Ferris wheel, Mike. Don't worry about that. And while we're discussing that, I should probably tell you about the fungawungas, and I'm one of them. Yeah, that's right. I'm a lizard with fucking 10 faces. You're about to die, mate. Yeah. 10-faced lizard, yeah. I don't even know what I'm saying. This is just a learned sort of mating call I'm doing. It sounds like I'm a person talking. I'm a five-faced. I'm a fucking five-faced lizard, mate.
Just coincidence that I happen to be explaining that process.
Yeah, just fucking millions of years of evolution, mate, all right?
We build these Ferris wheels to attract humans.
They're actually made of bark. Yeah.
Oh, mate.
And you've paid $9 for this. I bet you feel like a total mug.
I'm having that too. And also, you just think you're a person. You're not. You're actually a form of fungus. You're a jibbly jabbler. You're just a fucking fungus that's evolved to think it's a human.
I sloughed you off 17 years ago, mate.
Well, thank you, Catherine. That's a very generous...
great offer.
Yeah, thank you.
I also like the idea of someone being the manager of a Ferris wheel. Like,
it's true that manager, but it sets up the idea of the sort of the mundanity of it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because anything which is a manager is just it's Excel spreadsheets, it's invoices, it's.
Yes, I think if you're running a Ferris wheel, you're more of a Ferris master. That's what I'd call myself, rather than the
Ferris
wheel.
Maybe she's got a checkered past. Maybe she's maybe she was in the field and now she's the goddamn guys from City Hall have put her behind a desk.
Yeah.
She's just desperate to get
back
out.
She's in Ferris wheel HQ.
Yeah. There's nowhere she belongs. Yeah. She should be out in the field.
And I also assume that the manager's office is right in the hub, the centre of the wheel, right? So it's spinning at all times. Yeah, it's very hard to do the paperwork in that situation. You've got to... There's a lot of magnets. You've got to magnetise shit to walls in there all the time.
Well, thank you, Catherine.
Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine. Catherine Wheel, we could call her. Hello?
Get out.
Is everything okay?
How dare you?
Sorry.
She took the time to write in, and that's all you can... You think she hasn't heard that before, Henry?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Down at the Ferris wheel?
Oh, God.
Poor Catherine.
The other thing we talked about was forests.
Forests.
Ah, forests.
So we did.
And
And again, we did talk a bit about forests in this. Mm. I do think we kept strictly on topic, but we had thoughts.
Well,
no one's going to do a sort of foresty pun to get us into this.
Well, I tell you what, I'm always a big fan of anyone who works for any sort of forestry commission.
Mm-hmm.
And on that topic, it looks like we've forestry recommissioned more chat on forestry. Forests.
Oh. I feel quite tired after that.
We covered a whole park ranger stuff.
Not bad.
When we talked about forests.
Our bark wasn't worse than our chat. We couldn't see the wood for the trees. I've just said the phrase. That's all.
Logs.
Just listen to this. Listen to this bit now. Thanks.
Yeah, and I bet you'll be liking it.
Hold on.
Liking it.
I bet you
will
be you liking it. If you
log on to the web,
maybe your friend Hazel
Chop
can helm you do that
because you've been pining for more.
You can see there's more.
No. Oak, fuck off.
No. Enjoy. More chat about forests. In Wales, the current First Minister of Wales, Mark Drakeford, his ambition and the ambition of the Welsh Government is to create a National Forest of Wales that stretches coast to coast, north to south.
Wow. That's the whole of Wales then, isn't it?
Yeah. So the idea being that you could enter the forest and not leave the forest...
Come out in the Menai Strait.
Yeah, come out in Bangor, essentially. So, yeah, you should be able to...
So that means you could enter the forest at the north of Wales. You could be, obviously, as anyone would be in a forest, creeped out, possibly going to some sort of panic. And you could not escape that horrific, dark place, that fairy tale place of horrors, the universal horror, the ancient horror... Of the forest space, the space which is inhospitable to humans, the place which wants to kill you, to destroy you, to essentially to break you down into fungal manure or fungal. I mean, essentially, it wants to turn you into fungus food.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could not, you could run,
yeah.
And you wouldn't be out of it for days until you reached literally the other side of the country,
unless you went sideways.
Unless you went left or right, yeah.
And I think necessarily sometimes it's going to be very slim, isn't it? You know, there'll be little corridors.
It's got to be, surely. There's all sorts of towns and villages it's going to have to navigate around, presumably.
Yeah.
Could be the world's longest and thinnest forest.
How narrow can a forest be? Can it be single file at any point?
Just one tree?
Just one tree? One tree's width?
I don't know. I think at least two widths.
You've got to be able to get lost in it. So minimum two.
I think it's a bit like that lava game. If a squirrel can get across it without touching the ground, that's one forest.
One unit of forest. So maybe a single file is acceptable then.
You should be able to release a squirrel in South Wales and it arrive in North Wales, having not touched the ground. I think that's a good...
And what you would do is you'd use the honing power of the squirrel. So you'd take the squirrel, you'd expose it to a nut.
Yeah.
Right.
A walnut, a Brazil nut, any nut.
Macadamia?
A macadamia.
The native nuts of Wales.
Any of Wales is fabulous. Native nuts.
Yeah.
A Welsh blue.
The Glyndŵr cashew.
An Aberystwyth almond. I'm just saying.
We could just do this all day, couldn't we?
Well, yeah, we could. Yeah, there's no.
The Lampeter fucknut.
There you go. Very good. And you transport that to, then fly that to.
Yeah, you chopper it.
Yeah,
you chopper it. Military chopper because it's important. And you'd want that military chopper to have a motorcade travelling underneath it at the same time, just to make...
Through the forest, like smashing the forest up.
Smashing the forest to smithereens. A motorcade of 50
resilience.
Tanks.
There's no point in it being a forest if it's not resilient to at least one motorcade passing through it.
Exactly.
And a chopper slicing through the canopy.
Yeah, low chopper.
Yeah.
and you chop that nut up to up to the other side, and then you release a squirrel, and the squirrel will hone in on it, won't it? It's incredible.
Yeah. And if it can do it, we've achieved the National Forest of Wales.
Yeah.
If not, back to the drawing board.
If the squirrel is found at any stage to be walking, hitching a ride, tunnelling.
Yeah. None of that will all make it.
It's null and void.
And it can't be it feels like it doesn't need to be stated, but you have to get this stuff in the small print. It can't be a flying squirrel, obviously. Come on, guys. Yeah, I mean, let's talk about reforestation. Do we agree with it? Do we like the idea of returning Britain to a sort of fairy tale kingdom, which is a kingdom which is mainly
forests, no Wi-Fi, no working sewers, no schools?
Well, no, because Mike, I want to see the forest of the future. I want to see the Wi-Fi enabled forest.
Oh, I see.
So we can rewild as much as you like, but want there to be
hotspot elms.
Yeah, exactly. Wi-Fi, you know, decent coffee.
And so squirrels online, is that, yeah?
Yeah, they're online, yeah.
So the squirrels are online and they are storing their nuts?
Virtually, I suppose.
They're kind of virtually. Yeah.
They're bit nut. So they'll be collecting bit nut.
It is mad when you think about how Britain and all of Europe basically just used to be a big forest. I think I'm right in saying that.
Yeah.
It's a bit like the Amazon or something, you know, like that's there. But we would have been like that.
There'd have just been the odd Gaul or Celt somewhere hacking a clearing away.
Yeah. We've cleared the entire thing, basically. Good job.
It took a while.
We've done the equivalent of sort of shaving a beard off, haven't we?
Yeah.
To the point where lots of it isn't growing back.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of it's got a Tesco on it now.
Yeah, that's true.
I suppose it was before borders and national borders, wasn't it? There was the forest.
Yeah.
And the forest was this dark place that was populated by wolves.
Robin Hood. Imps. Tree elves. A lot of wood lice.
Shitloads of them.
Creepy old women.
Creepy old men. Creepy old children.
And of course, a whole host of mushroom fairies.
With the wisdom of the soils.
Cleave close, old children. The mushroom fairies are abound.
And as you say, yes, old ladies who are don't trust them in any way. Just everything they say is bollocks.
Please help me, sir. I've trapped in my foot under a stone.
No, she hasn't.
Bollocks.
She has. Also, anyone young or attractive. Mm. Kiss them, they instantly turn into a haggard old crone.
So no smooching. There's no smooching going on in this forest.
No smooching.
That's the thing with the National Forest of Wales, basically. There are a lot of old crones around these days.
So many.
In modern Wales. But they look out of place, you know, sitting outside a M&S.
They need a wattle and daub sort of smokestack somewhere in the middle of a very dark bit of the forest.
There are many people living in this country who make more sense in that context than in the modern context.
Right, yeah. By the way, it's quite a timely topic, isn't it, Forrest? Because autumn is upon us. And I feel I've just brought in the autumn because this has just happened. I went to get a coffee, and when I came back, I just felt this, I don't know where it came from, I felt like an invisible hand on my shoulder and an invisible voice whispering into my ear, take off your shorts, Henry. It's time. and I took off my shorts and I've put on a pair of green corduroys and an orange jumper. I'm wearing my spirit of the autumn outfit.
Wow. Golly. Just now.
Just now.
Look. During the course of that jingle.
During as long as it took for that jingle to happen.
You're looking quite autumnal.
Yeah, I've gone.
I'm getting hot apple pies,
hot pumpkin pies,
I'm getting putting a scarf on.
Halloween naysaying.
Yeah,
I'm getting kicking through big piles of golden dry leaves and finding a huge dog turd in the middle that you weren't able to see.
Yeah,
you've now kicked it at your wife.
Yeah. It's my traditional is how I bring in the autumn. I don't know. obviously knowing that those turds are all part of the same cycle that we're all on, which is feeding mushrooms, isn't it? And all the autumnal, you know, and this is happening in the forests all around the world now. All the autumnal, because the forest, of course, autumn is what regenerates the forest, isn't it?
Yeah.
For another year, the leaves fall down.
Badgers are kicking turds at their spouses.
Exactly. All the different animals are kicking turds at each other. Yeah, there'll be badgers with turd hats. And all of that is just creating this mulch, isn't it?
Yeah.
A stinking brown mulch.
In which the fungi can thrive.
In which the fungi can thrive. Yeah, so this is an important time for the forest, isn't it?
Have you ever been to a foreign forest?
Do you mean a jungle?
Well, I guess, what's the difference?
I went to a jungle in Indonesia on a quest to find an orangutan colony.
Oh.
Just me, the tent, and 15 other tourists and six guides.
Did you find them?
Yeah, of course we did. I mean, it's an orangutan.
They literally let them out of the cage minutes before you arrived
yeah.
at the area.
Yeah. It's an orangutan holiday experience, so the orangutans appeared on cue, and
And the hunting was good.
And the hunting was good, and the rifle aimed true.
Were you struck by the sort of, you know, we share 99.5% of our DNA with an orangutan. Were you struck by the kinship?
But we're also 99% water, so which is it? Am I water or am I a big monkey? Why am I? Can't be both, so all of it's a bit unconvincing, isn't it?
So what do you think orangutans are? Just guys in suits?
Leviticus, essentially. It's all in Leviticus. Do I think monkeys are
people in
water dressed as people?
Yeah.
No.
Do you think it's possible that the people at the tourism centre where you were staying were dressed as orangutans?
It's not impossible. They did say, they said, right, the orangutans are about to appear.
Can you just close your eyes for a minute?
Just close your eyes for a minute, and can you make a noise, a continual noise, for a bit, quite a loud one?
It just needs to be loud enough to conceal the noise of a zip.
So you could actually make a zip noise if you want, because that'll counteract it really well. Yes, and then there was a bit of warming up of they did some monkey scales, and also one of them was Brian Blessed.
That's a dead giveaway, isn't it?
Now the orangutans were excellent. Being in a jungle was quite... Because we stayed a night in the tent. I'll tell you one thing about the jungle. Absolute bloody racket. They do not shut up, those things. The animal is worse than London in terms of sleep, getting sleep. The jungle is... You don't realise this. The jungle is really noisy. It's just non-stop. Just whack, 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 whack. All these... and that's just me doing two insects, and there's so many more than that. But even just one insect going, imagine how annoying that would be.
Yeah,
there's just 50,000 of them, so it doesn't stop the noise. It's very close and sweaty, obviously.
Mm. Decent croissants in the morning.
The forest croissants are rancid. I'm not going to lie. It's basically mushrooms in the shape of a croissant. Everything is mushrooms. Mm-hmm. Really horrible, long. Sort of tongue-like fungi. So, but yeah, I tell you what I did. What I remember thinking was, because I was quite excited by the idea of a jungle.
Mm.
And being in a jungle is quite exciting, I think, isn't it? But I think what I had in mind was something much more similar to fictional jungles I've seen on screen, was actually a jungle is just like a forest, but really hot and noisy.
Mm.
It doesn't, but I thought it would look much more incredible, and it'd be like, basically what I thought it'd be is those vines that hang down that you can swing around on.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't see a single vine. It was basically...
That and Birds of Paradise.
Yeah, those sorts of things. And those huge Venus flytraps that eat people.
Yeah.
Those things. And there was none of that. It's sort of, so in the same way that being in a British forest is essentially, after a certain point, there's a point where it's like, oh, it's mythical. There's a point where it's like, oh, it's fairy tale and it's scary. And there's a point where it's like, it's quite boring. I'd much rather be reading or watching or listening to a Grisham.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I went to a forest in Brazil that wasn't the Amazon. It's called the Atlantic Forest, I think.
Does it have a bit of a chip on its shoulder about not being the Amazon? But presumably, to go all that way and not go to the Amazon feels a bit...
I think it's the second biggest forest on Earth behind the Amazon. So it's, yeah.
Do they remind you about that quite a lot there, do they?
But yeah, it did look a bit more like a British forest than I thought it might.
Yeah.
But there
were
lots of tiny monkeys everywhere.
Okay, that's cool.
And I remember there was a bit where it was quite visitor-centery and it wasn't that jungly, but you could kind of see into the jungle and there's all these little monkeys coming up and people feed them stuff. Yep. There was a kid in a pram and the monkey just jumped fully onto the kid's chest. Baby must be about 2 years old, and just screamed in the baby's face. And then the baby started screaming. And it was just great to watch something that you know will have such an impact on that kid's personality for the rest of its life happen live in front of you. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was like, that kid's going to think of that monkey screaming in its face every time it closes its eyes now for the next 90 years, potentially.
Yeah.
And it's just nice to see that kind of pivotal moment happen.
It's nice to see that.
Yeah.
Because they're probably both at the same sort of mental... at that point, they're probably both on the same level, aren't they?
I think the little monkey probably saw a kindred spirit in that pram. Yeah.
Yeah. A thing happens on monkey holidays where the point comes where you realise that all they are is
essentially squirrels.
They're just... Or pigeons.
Yeah.
They're essentially non-flying pigeons.
Yes. When you see a certain number of them, they stop being quite so special, don't they?
Yeah.
And the locals do not care about... I mean, they're not nonplussed by a tiny monkey.
I went on a tiger safari once. Have I talked about that?
Oh, my God.
No. Have I talked about that?
I don't think so.
We've talked about you being pissed on by a tiger in Marwell Zoo.
Well, I recovered from that, and many, many years later, I was in India, a place north of Delhi, and there's this huge kind of sort of area of forest land, I think disappointingly is still called the Jim Corbett National Park.
Who's Jim Corbett? The guy inside City?
Is the guy inside City, is either named after him or after one of his ancestors who I think was some sort of Victorian hunter, colonial type.
Yeah.
But it's very much kind of... they've got Tiger Reserve there now, and you go there, and a bit similar to Henry's experience in Indonesia, you go there with a legion of other tourists, is the idea. And we got there, they were very careful the night before to tell us to make sure that we were up at, 3 o'clock in the morning, ready to go, in perfect silence, because if you miss the dawn, forget it.
Yeah, you have to do a super early wake up, don't you, on those things?
And then we did that, and then we waited for about 4 hours, while a series of sort of red-faced, sort of sweaty European tourists, finally had their, sort of last coffee of breakfast and finished eating their buffet of hams, eventually trickled out and filled up the jeeps, by which time the blazing sun was up. And we went into this wildlife park and it's in a huge convoy of extremely noisy jeeps with everyone shouting at each other, "Have you seen a tiger?" And a single guide with his head in his hands, sort of pointing out that no one's going to see a tiger. We saw a paw print once. And then after about 3 hours of driving about and seeing nothing, the man was so disappointed there was a rustle in the bushes. And he said, "Look, a wild chicken!" And everyone stopped dead. Out came the cameras, long lenses. We froze. Some people claimed to have actually physically seen the wild chicken. Lots of us didn't believe it. Some say they saw a bit of feather. Some people saw rustling in the bushes.
As dangerous as a tiger, though.
Yeah.
We weren't sure. But there was something in that bush. And the local expert swore blind it was a wild chicken.
Do you think they do that on the way home? If you haven't seen a tiger, they surreptitiously throw a wild chicken into a bush and then...
I would imagine he was carrying a burlap bag that kept wriggling throughout the entire journey. He'd occasionally pour seed into it.
Quiet, Samuel. Quiet, Samuel. This isn't the moment yet. Shh. Samuel, shush.
Remember, you'll have to find your own way home.
Samuel, the consolation chicken.
Don't worry. The tigers have all gone to bed now. You'll be fine. Samuel... Be careful.
Samuel, no!
Samuel 37 doesn't make it home. So, yeah, so I've been on a tiger safari and then I've been on a safari in which the aim was to see a tiger and I didn't see a tiger.
But you did see some jungly jungle.
But I did see some jungly jungle. I don't know if you call it jungle or forest. I don't know.
Where was it? Where? What part of the world?
What do you call it? It was a bit north of Delhi.
Oh.
It felt like we were in a forest rather than a jungle when we were there. I didn't feel like I was in a jungle.
But I think this is what we're learning, is that every time you go to a jungle, it turns out just to feel a bit like a forest.
So maybe I was in a jungle and I didn't know it at the time.
Yeah, I think jungle as we imagine it, I think probably only exists in the film Apocalypto and some other sort of B movies. Like that jungle is probably just a sort of creation of cinema. They are just hot forests.
It's time for Listener Bollocking of the Week.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Accessing Listener Bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
This is a bollocking for all of us, which is rare.
Right, it's rare.
Ah, okay.
Does that mean that we're each getting a third of a bollocking, or are we getting a full bollocking each?
I don't think they. Yeah, I think it's a full. I think it's usually the full.
I think the bollocking doesn't diminish.
Yeah.
With the more people that get by,
don't think it makes. Yeah, bollockings and love can be. You can slice it up as much as you like, and it doesn't. It never reduces.
It's infinite in that way. In the same way that there's an infinite amount of numbers, and there's an infinite amount of odd numbers, and there's an infinite amount of even numbers, and there's an infinite amount of
numbers with five in it.
Yeah. There's an infinite amount of all the numbers.
Yeah, it's good.
So even
good
if
point.
You cut up the pie, each one is still infinite.
Someone listen to a podcast.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so it's like that.
Welcome to In Our Time. This week we're talking about smug things you could say. Okay, so this is an email from Sam, but be aware we've had this email from like 10 people. It's really got people annoyed.
Oh.
Oh, dear.
Consider this a bollocking. On Wednesday the 19th of October, the accused, that's us, published an episode called Mail.
Uh-huh.
At the timestamp, 2023, Mr. M. Wozniak made the following statement. An adder is the most poisonous snake in the UK.
Okay.
Fellow beams, Mr. H. Packer and Ben, followed suit, matching Wozniak's intent to diminish the perceived threat of the reptile when compared to the other deadly animalia around the globe. However, Wozniak et al. Made a glaring faux pas. The adder is not poisonous. It is venomous. Packer goes on to make the following remark. On the poison scale, it measures zero. It's about as poisonous as a tortoise. However, Packer is not free from the icy vice-like grip of this bollocking, since Packer's inflection and choice of words would suggest that he was attempting to communicate humour again by diminishing the perceived threat of the adder. Mistaking venomous for poisonous is a potentially fatal error for one to make. Okay. So allow me to provide you with a simple adage to avoid this complication in the future. If you bite it and you die, it's poisonous. If it bites you and you die, it is venomous.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. So if you bite it and you die, what's happened?
If you bite an adder and you die,
yeah,
then the adder was poisonous.
Is that right?
But if it bites you and you die, okay, then the adder was venomous.
Okay. And that's why poison is quite commonly a murder technique. Isn't it? Whereas venom isn't, because you'd have to be, but you'd have to bite. You'd have to be a snake.
Exactly.
You'd have to be a murderous snake. So that's probably one of the reasons that there isn't a big detective fiction scene in the reptile kingdom. Because if you're a snake, you'd choose venom every time. If you're a snake using poison, you wouldn't be a snake. Yeah.
Now we've had a lot of emails about this. People are really annoyed about it for some reason. We've had about 10.
Yeah.
Okay, it's fair enough.
But we also had this email from Richard. So before we decide to accept or reflect that bollock, this is from Richard. The subject line is Adders, a preemptive reflecto-bollock.
Oh, blimey.
In the Mail episode, you discussed adders. Mike and I think Ben referred to them as poisonous snakes. I'm guessing you're going to get a torrent of bollockings saying that adders are venomous, not poisonous. Well, correct, Richard. To those bollockers, may I just point this out? All venomous snakes are also poisonous if you eat enough of the wrong bit.
Oh.
Yours, Richard.
Oh, God. Richard, well done. He's out pedantried the pedants.
But are all poisonous snakes...
Careful.
...venomous if, in the process of them biting you, they are sick into your mouth? Does that make sense?
I don't think so. I think if you don't understand your own question, you can't expect us to.
The trouble with this, right, this is the kind of logic area that really I struggle with saying. So, okay, poisonous is, it's like a bottle of poison in the shape of a snake. Yeah. Essentially, if you were to drink, you would die.
Yeah, consume it in any way. Inhale it, eat it, drink it.
But you wouldn't do that. So, I mean, do you get poisonous animals?
That's what they're saying.
Who's going around eating animals?
Which is kind of saying, like, if you just... You probably would have to get, like, 100 adders and then get all of the correct gland and then put them all together and mush them into a sort of patty.
Yeah.
Enough of that would kill
you. If you had too many breakfast hams and you had the wrong hams and you happened to eat a ham that came from a pig that had a poison sack... And you had the poison sack as well, because you thought, oh, that looks interesting.
Okay.
Do you mean venom sack?
Venom sack. Yeah, why not? Then you would have been poisoned.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. But he's got us out of the bollocking.
Oh, yeah, we've reflected that bollock effortlessly. Thank you, Richard.
Reflecto bollock.
Yeah, oh, thanks, Richard. Richard.
That's off. Brilliant.
That's great. That sort of took care of itself.
Yeah.
And finally, we talked... of crisps.
Crisps.
Put it this way. I'm not sure about, you know, it's a festive time of year, and I'm not sure if good King Wenceslas these days would be out there gathering winter fuel. He'd probably, certainly things would be, he'd deepen crisps and even. I was trying to get towards deepen crisps and even. I'm absolutely knackered now, I tell you, I'm knackered.
But we weren't knackered when we recorded this, as you can tell, because we were talking about crisps and we had even more to say about crisps. So here's some more stuff about crisps. Enjoy crisps.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Christmas has happened already,
but
happy next Christmas.
Happy next Christmas.
Yeah.
I tell you what, problem I have, because I'm a showerer. There's one thing I will say for myself, and that is I have a shower every day I'm on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes two. I'm just one of those people, because there are some people that'll leave a day here and there.
And when you say you're one of those people, you have that in common with basically everyone in this country.
I'm one.
Having a shower every day, like a total maverick.
Occasionally two.
Call me kooky. Yeah, no, one thing I will say for myself is I'm like one of the people on this planet. Is that what you're saying?
Well, certainly in Britain.
Or Britain. Is it a British thing? Is showering quite British? I don't know.
Well, I'm just thinking there are parts of the world where people aren't fortunate enough to have that kind of situation. But
I think it's partly my Turkish heritage. Cause
it would be maverick if you were doing it during lunch or something. But I suspect you're probably doing it at the start of the day.
No, first, I tell you what, one thing I will say to myself, I get up, I have a shower, I'll have some breakfast, and I'll consider what I'm going to do for the day. And I'll just do that most days. I'm just one of those. Do you know what I mean? I think I'm a Turkic heritage, though, because Turkish men are quite into sort of having showers and stuff, probably. Washing. I think it's just human. It is just human, isn't it? It's just human culture. I'll have a wash. But what happens to me? So I have a shower every morning. And
it's interesting, because I've got Polish and Welsh ancestry. And yeah. I've visited both of those countries, and they've got showers. In Poland.
So maybe that's why you shower as well, Mike, sometimes, don't you?
It might be.
Yeah,
so there is a... Yeah, you can always trace these things back.
And here in Wales, there's certainly a kind of rich heritage of people having a shower.
Well, a lot of people's bathrooms have showers in them, don't they, in Wales?
Increasingly these days.
Increasingly, yeah.
Really stumbled onto something here.
But what happens to me in the shower quite often is I come out of the shower. It's one of the ironies of water, of liquid, is liquid water, is that... you feel pretty wet during a shower, don't you? Come out.
Yeah, if you're doing it right, yeah.
Obviously, because we come from shower cultures, we've learned these things. These things have been mastered by our ancestors, haven't they?
Have an inherent understanding of the wetness feeling.
But you come out and then you dry yourself and then your skin dries. I get dry, really, really dry after a shower, after I towel myself down. Something for the listeners out, isn't it?
For our depraved 25%.
Maybe you should write to Alanis Morissette and saying, if you want to put a new verse in the song, ironic. Just for
it's like dry skin after you've had a shower, if you're from a shower culture. Yeah.
There you go. So maybe if she's doing another live tour, she could just fit that into a new verse.
Keep it relevant, keep it current. But I get very, very dry. So I have to moisturize. And it's almost like, hang on a second. If I hadn't... What? What's going on here? When I woke up, I was a good mixture of wet and dry, didn't we? I wasn't wet and dry. Well, I wasn't wet and I wasn't dry. I was whatever's in between.
That's Henry's wet tribute button. Wet, wet and dry.
Where it's 2/3 of the night is playing songs by that great band, and the other third of the night is devilishly dry anecdotes from me. It's wet, wet and dry. Still waiting for our first booking. So I'm moisturising myself up. I'm like, hang on a minute. If I hadn't gotten the shower in the first place, I wouldn't be having to do. I mean, what's going on here with moisture? I've made myself wet. I'm now dry. So dry, I'm having to make myself wet again. But do you know what I mean? Anyway, but the point I'm trying to make is one of the problems I have is because of soap. So when I'm in the shower in the morning, I soak myself down.
Oh, interesting, because I soap myself up.
I soap myself sideways.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know which...
Because it's with the grain, you see.
Well, I used to... is it left to right or right to left, your grain?
It's left to right.
Left to right. From your point of view? Or the carpenter?
From a mirror image.
Okay, but what I quite often do is I soak myself up and I wash it off, and then I've forgotten which bits of myself I've soaped because I've never come up with a decent order to do it in. Do I start with the face and go clockwise? That feels logical, but clockwise from whose point of view? I'm the clock in this situation. I've never told, you know what I mean?
You need someone in the shower room with you with a body chart who's ticking off the areas. That's what I do.
That's what you need.
Ticks off, colours them in as you soap up or off or across or down.
Believe you me, Mike, if I could afford it, that is something I would do. But I'm having to just use my own wits, and frankly, it's a struggle. So what happens is I'll soak my neck.
That's where you start, is it?
Well, because you don't soak the whole body, do you? You soak the there are certain zones that you soak, isn't it? Neck, armpits, middle area,
backs of knees, nostrils,
backs of knees. Feet, nostrils. But there are bits you don't really soap, because you don't soap everything. There's a certain zones, aren't there, that you focus on.
Oh, Henry, are you aware of that? There's a certain, there's a kind of Twitter meme that went around. It's kind of amongst what they call black Twitter in America.
Oh.
Where there was a thing where there was an idea that white people, this is what black people were saying, white people don't wash their legs.
Oh, God, I agree with that.
Well, yeah. And basically they were going, this is disgusting. Why don't white people wash their legs? And then all white people were like, yeah, I don't wash my legs.
Of course not.
Yeah. And ever since that, I've assiduously washed my legs.
Oh. Well, I don't massively wash my legs. That's but what? But the problem I do have is basically I'll be in the shower at a certain point. And I'll go, I can't remember if I've soaked myself yet. And I'll do it. I'll soak myself up, potentially for the second time. And then a bit later in the shower, I'll be like...
You're soaping yourself down.
I knew that I was going to soak myself up, and I was worried if I'd done it, but I can't remember if I actually did it or not.
And you've been there for about 4.5 hours at this point.
And I might be there for 4.5 hours. And I'll soak myself... And sometimes I feel like I'm soaping myself 3, 4, 5 times. So that means I'm coming out, and I'm absolutely crispy as hell, dry as a bone. And I can feel the skin tightening on my face. Do you ever have that? You feel the skin trying to... Sort of clinging on to the bone. It's avoiding the muscle. It's going straight to the bone. It's not even going via the muscle. It's not a nice feeling.
Are you stealth sponsored in this episode by Nivea? Is that what's going on?
There is a touch of the brand ambassador to this.
You brought it up, but Nivea for men. I dab my fingers into it, each hand.
Oh, you go for the tiger claw technique.
Go for tiger claw, and then I sort of rub it into my cranium. Mm. And I'm ready for the day.
Here's a question. As a bald man, do you have to moisturise the whole dome?
I think about the whole dome, but I definitely put some up there. But we know this then links to my problem, which is I've got a big greasy head.
Yes, of course.
Okay, so you don't want
to... you're damned if you do, damned if you don't with this head, because...
You don't want to over-moisturise. That's good.
I think I probably do over-moisturise. I do leave damp marks wherever I lay my head. Yeah.
Okay, favourite crisp, go.
Flavour, or generally speaking?
Well, flavour, yes, but also, you know, what are you flavouring with that flavour? I mean, we've established that Mike likes the austere world of the putting a small sachet of salt on your own crisps.
Yeah, and there's the crisp, there's the coffee table crisp, isn't there? There's the crisp I want people to...
Well, the crisp that you don't actually eat, it's just there to impress people.
Crisper, exactly, yeah, like your salt and vinegar kettle chip, right?
Yeah, no one's eating that stuff.
But really, I'm nipping up to the toilet. I'm putting my nose in a bag of Frazzles.
Yeah. So the kettle chip is the equivalent of a large
plush, hardback, glossy book.
It's a Mondrian collection or something like that.
Yeah. Mm. Or about 1950s advertising.
Yeah. Exactly.
Photos from 1950s. You're never actually leafing through that.
The spine would crack if you tried to lift it open. Yeah, exactly. No one will.
Can I surprise you both?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
My favourite crisp, salt vinegar kettle chips.
Wow. Aristocracy. You can't hide it. Those are ancient.
That's it. That's the thing.
That palate is so sophisticated.
It's just deep in his DNA, down to his marrow, isn't it?
Also, there's a kind of fake kettle crisp as well, made by Co-op, the Co-op's own version, which I think they try and make posh by calling it, it's something like...
Dr. Barnabas's rich...
Imperial crisps.
there's a lot of Victoriana.
There's a lot of that business going on, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they've gone for more, like, they're really trying to make out that the flavours of salt vinegar are posh. So it's like...
Oh, you need an adjective in front of salt, don't you?
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's sea salt and Chardonnay vinegar.
Fucking hell.
That's it. Yeah. That is so true. And there's now an arms race of how posh can we get the adjectives.
Nape of neck of sweaty Duke salt.
Yeah.
And heritage Cheltenham ham.
Oh, yeah.
It's all nonsense.
Mm. Yeah.
But the that Chardonnay vinegar stuff from Co-op, it's I'm sure there'll be listeners who are on my side with the best crisp going, but the following day you will be racked with dozens of mouth ulcers. Are you aware of that kind of crisp?
So you like the burn?
Yeah, it totally strips off your inside of your mouth.
Yeah. But it's a party in your mouth when it's happening.
Yeah, but you know that the next day is going to be absolute hell, but it's worth it.
So a hedonistic type of crisp.
Well, my favourite crisp flavour is... it's that kind of thing where it's like when someone says to you, you know, what's your favourite band or what music are you into? As Mike was saying, you're sort of wrestling...
Atomic Kitten.
Atomic Kitten, exactly. It's simple. It's like there's part of me thinking, what do they want me to think?
Yes.
What do I want to think is the truth?
I think I've got quite 80s tastes when it comes to my crisp snacks and things.
So you run upstairs. It's Frazzles, is it for you? Yeah,
Secret Frazzles, and things like they used to run. I can't remember who always used to do like tomato ketchup flavored crisps, and I loved them. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That was Walkers for a little while. Mm.
Was it? Yeah. That kind of. I mean, in the same way with an ice cream, I'll go for a mint choc chip.
That's so Mike. That is so 80s.
Yeah, so 80s.
Mint choc chip.
And I love like synthetic banana flavor. All this kind of stuff.
Synthetic banana flavor.
Wow.
It gets me every time. I'm a sucker for it.
Minty ice cream is such an 80s experience, I think.
It's so 80s.
It's lush.
Mm. I'm not a fan.
Yes, please. Wash down with a mouthful of Frazzles. Away we go.
And a couple of after eights.
Oh, now you're talking.
Would it sound pretentious if I was to say that the only way I really enjoy mint as a flavour is if it's...
Is as a shower gel.
Is on my smarting hot nipples.
and screaming perineum.
At the break of dawn. Screaming, I'm alive! With all that entails, the pleasure and the bloody pain. God damn it, I'm here! Gah!
How long are you going to be in the shower, Henry?
Nearly finished! Ah! Yeah. Christ. Would it sound pretentious if I was to say that the only way I really enjoy the flavour of mint is if it's fresh mint tossed over either a salad or a French dessert?
Sorry, Henry.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Yes, correct.
I basically...
You're trying way too hard.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Ben is the real deal when it comes to aristocracy.
Yeah, I'm trying too hard.
We all know a faker.
I'm trying too hard. I don't like mint. I just don't like mints. But I love mince, which has got... I tell you what, that has got me into some trouble.
Henry, I got you the mince shower gel.
Oh, not again.
Oh, Henry and his lovely fresh bolognese breath. I love it every morning.
I've got to be polite. I'll have to use the mince shower gel. I'll have to rub it in. You've got to use it. He's bought it.
New from Henry Packer, Wrigley's Lamb Mince Gum.
Sorry, how do you like mint? That you in a posh way is basically what you're saying. Like kind of fresh.
No, I just don't like mints that much. So I don't like no, Treble either. Mints. I don't like Triple X Mints.
You won't mind a mint bush. If someone's got a little mint bush in their kitchen, you'll give it a sniff.
Anyway. If someone's got a little mint bush, I'll give it a sniff. I'll cut some off and I'll whop it in anything.
Yeah. A wallet.
A wallet. A bag.
Bookmark.
So crisp-wise.
Oh, I'd love a mint crisp. I'd be interested in that.
Oh, that Mike. Please, no.
I tell you what I don't like about mint is it turns everything into a slightly toothbrushy experience. That's the trouble with mint. Yeah.
That's the problem. We've associated it with the world of toileting and not...
And lamb, weirdly.
Yeah, but those are my two happy places. I love lambs and I love a bluting. So,
so lamb-flavoured toothpaste.
That's fine for me.
With a little bit of mint toothpaste on top.
Oh, yeah.
So my thing with crisps is I eat a lot of crisps. I've had to cut down recently because my dentist said to me, she looked in my mouth and she said...
She said it's full of crisps. Stop eating crisps during the...
You absolutely refuse to brush your teeth before you go and have your mouth inspected by a professional.
She said most people brush their teeth, but Henry, it's been a long time since I've seen someone that not only is just eating some crisps, but is still eating some crisps and is eating crisps right now in front of me and just has a mouth literally full of crisps.
He's using crisps eating as a substitute for brushing teeth.
Yeah. She said, "There's something going on." Like she said, "Do you drink? Do you drink a lot of lemon juice, or do you? Is there a lot of acid in your like?
Do you gargle a lot of mint shower gel?"
She's seen quite a lot of acid damage to my teeth, and she was asking me about. And I was thinking, extreme lemon. She said, "Do you sort of drink a lot of fruit juice and keep it in your mouth for quite a while before swallowing,
savoring the taste?"
Do you? And I don't do any of those things. And then I only worked out afterwards what I think it is I basically, either one or two packets of salt and vinegar crisps per day, pretty much. And I think that's what it is because it's very acidy. I think it feels quite acidy. So I've sort of cut down the last couple of weeks. But for my flavour zone, it's salt and vinegar. So it's masochism. It's like, it's really aggressive, painful.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Just, it's like mint sauce sour gel, as you say, but the edible sort of. They're really smarting, tart,
the vinegar hit.
Mm. But I've always loved that since I was a kid. In fact, this might explain the acid damage to my teeth. As a kid, I used to love eating pickled onions raw. Do you guys do that?
Oh, I love pickled onions.
Yeah.
I love pickled onions. I once for Christmas got a jar of pickled onions as a present when I was about 9 years old. I was absolutely thrilled. Absolutely thrilled.
Do you like the dark pickle or the see-through pickle?
They were see-through, but I'm happy with any kind of pickle. Pickle anything and I'm in. I'm game.
I'm deep in the beetroot zone at the moment.
Really?
Yeah. Like Ooh, every day.
Very good.
So, God, so all three of us are quite into sort of pickled.
Like a vinegary hit.
That's why we like Branston's, isn't it?
It always comes back to our old friend, to Branston's.
To still, for some reason, not sponsoring the podcast, Branston's.
Well, so the thing is with Branston's.
And yet the door is open because we have not turned on you as a brand. The door is open.
Well, I think we're about... I'm about to...
But it's closing.
I'm about to turn on them as a brand because...
Okay.
I think I mentioned this on the podcast. I messaged them to say, guys, we're kind of a big deal, in terms of Branston.
Mm. Yeah.
You need to...
Yeah.
No podcast is talking about Branston Picklemore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then one day... I got a message from them saying, hey, we'd like to have a tete-a-tete. Let's talk. And so I responded and said, yeah, DM me or whatever. And I was like, this is it. They're going to swoop in, sponsor the podcast. This is going to essentially become the Branston pod.
Yeah. Set for life, pickles-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Three Branston salad is going to be huge.
We'd rebrand.
We'd rebrand for Branston. We'd rebrandston.
Yeah. And we would become, we've already discussed this, we would happy to have, a bit like the M&M's characters, to have three... Branston character, so I'd be a cube of
I'm sexy Branston.
I'd be cuckolded Branston.
The cuckolded carrot.
Cuckolded rancid, bit of carrot Branston.
Cuckolded carrot cube, yeah.
And Ben, you'd be a sort of sexy courgette lump, isn't it? We decided. A really old, really, really old rancid, pickled sort of, putrid bit of sexy courgette.
Yeah. And then Mike?
I'd be a filthy lid.
Mike would just be like a filthy old lid that you can't clean. You could never get those stains off. Mm.
So yeah, we're willing to do that.
So we're ready to go.
Anyway, so they messaged me and I was thinking, this is it. They're going to make the offer. And they said, we're bringing out something called Branstonaise.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a mix of Branston pickle and mayonnaise. I was already thinking, that's very nice. And they were like, and we're willing to send you a free jar of it
That's not.
That's not what we're talking about.
We're not talking about a free jar.
No. We're talking about a lifetime free jar. Like, that's what I wanted.
We're talking about...
There's some bad elements have got into Branson's, if that's what they're creating. And it sounds like Prince Benjamin needs to do some sort of pickle putsch, I would say.
Yeah, a pickle putsch is what we need.
And get things back to how they were in the old days, when there was nothing wrong with any of it.
I don't want a bad mouth Branson Ace, because I've not tried it yet. But I'm not... Let's just put it this way. I'm not desperate to try it.
No. When you're at the point of sticking A's on the end of things, do you know what I mean? I think we're in a culture now where you think you can stick A's on the end of anything and make it... I think at that point they're trying too hard. Go back to the essentials. It's a jar of filthy brown, acrid, off veg. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what it is. And for some reason it works.
We know that.
And we like it.
We know that and we like it.
And I think as far as innovation goes, I'll take big chunk, small chunk. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even they could bring out no chunk, just the brown stuff.
Or one chunk.
One huge chunk.
Just one huge chunk.
Single chunk. Call it lucky chunk.
Lucky chunk.
But I feel bad now because I don't want to close the door on Branson, but maybe we have now in terms of a huge business partnership.
I don't know. I think once they sort themselves out, I'm sure they'll get back in touch when whichever rogue elements have been got rid of. Branston's flavoured crisps, that I would go for.
Oh, yeah.
I suspect that may have happened, doesn't it? I feel like that
must have happened.
Of course, it's a big time for crisps, isn't it? The festive season. People are buying large bags of crisps, pouring them into bowls.
Well, but yeah, people are bowling crisps much more.
People are bowling crisps. This is
December than the rest of the time.
This is the time for the bowling of crisps.
Yeah.
Oh, can I just say to Branson, if you're listening, I really like your baked beans. They're the best beans. I know this is slightly off topic, but Branson beans are by far and away. I've done a bit of a taste test recently. They are by far and away the best beans.
Do they do beans?
I wasn't aware of that.
They do beans. They're much better than Heinz. Heinz are rubbish. Better than Aldi's own.
Crumbs. This isn't just a bit of Heinz naysaying, is it? You're not just going in...
Because you're taking on the definitive brand of baked bean.
I'm not just trying to be edgy here. I think it's true. I just think Branson beans are nicer than Heinz beans.
Okay, well, you heard it here first. And that is pretty edgy.
I think Heinz have become complacent on their...
Fat and gassy on their own product.
Exactly.
For me, Heinz baked beans is one of those things where... We've talked about this before, where it's sort of like, you know, the basic one is the best sort of thing, like McVitie's chocolate digestives and stuff. So, like, if you get a fry-up in a place and they say, we've actually got some of our own with a little hint of chili home-done baked beans that we're doing. My heart always sinks. No. I'm like, no, please don't.
Yeah, if you're going to give it to me, at least just put it in a separate ramekin so I can throw it easily out the window and it doesn't go anywhere near the rest of the food.
Yeah, put it in a separate ramekin, ideally with a little catapult or something fun for the kids that we can launch it out of the window and swear at it as it goes. Thank you. Yes, like a mini bean cannon. Yeah. Yeah. You've already got them because you've set high demand for... Yeah, thank you.
The bean boucher. So yeah, so on one hand, I'm saying Branson A's, you're barking up very much the wrong tree. Branson beans, you are the tree.
Okay.
Thank you, Ben.
Also, you know, we're always open to emails on these topics. What are your favourite beans? You know, that feels very, very local radio, doesn't it? But I think we should go for it.
Given that the episode's about crisps, why not write to tell us what your favourite bean is?
And don't say we are three beans. Oh, you can if you want to. Don't say it, though. But do if you want to, but don't. Don't say that.
If you want to email in and say, it's Henry. Henry's my favourite bean.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
Don't say that, but do, but don't. You know what I mean? Do it, but don't. Actually do it, but do you know what I mean? But don't. Don't do it.
Crisps.
Crisps.
It's Pringles time, I think, for me. I associate Pringles with the festive season. They're quite like
the canister.
A canister of Pringles. A little tennis ball canister of Pringles.
How do you, you know, I'm going to just sort of mention something I just mentioned a minute ago, but again, which is that thing of the old companies that do it best, even though it's not the cheaper, better thing.
Yeah. Okay.
For me, that's what Walker's crisps are. That you've got the kettle crisps and you've got all these flash ones.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember Phineas Fogg?
Yeah.
Was it Phineas Fogg? That's what started the whole Victoriana element
of crisps.
For some reason, linking high quality snacks.
You think with Walker's, you know where you are, right? Some sort of benchmark.
But I think the Walker's salt and vinegar crisp, again, like it's your street crisp. You know, it's not got airs and graces. It's what the kids are eating. It's out there. You know what I mean?
But it's going to do the job.
It's going to do
the job.
But I believe it's more than that. I believe that it's sort of genius. You know, it's perfect. That those crisps they're light.
Have you got your eye on Gary Lineker's sponsorship job?
Well, all I'm saying is there's skeletons in that cupboard, and when they're out, I'm going to be ready to swoop.
Is that okay? I mean, I think there are skeletons in that cupboard.
But quite a libelous thing to say, isn't it?
It's quite
hugely.
It's got, yeah.
I would imagine he's probably able to get his hands on a more capable legal team than you were able to as well.
What, Alan Shearer?
At the end of the day, I don't think Henry had any right to say that.
Is that. That's one of the worst impressions of Alan Shearer I've ever heard.
I think Lineker is now reaching a point where he's so rich, it almost costs him more money to make more money for tax-wise. You know what I mean? Like, he's always at a point where he's going to have to stop making money because it's costing him a lot of money just to store it. You know what I mean? It comes to a point where literally it's cheaper to stop making money now. Because, I mean, it was made public a few years ago when he's the first BBC employee to earn over £40 billion a year.
He's worth it, though. He's worth it.
He's worth it. So it's half the GDP of Britain, isn't it? That's what...
Yeah. That's what we spend on.
That's what we spend on Lineker. And he is effortlessly affable and great company while watching a football match. You can't deny that.
And he backs it up with experience, having won the Golden Boot in the 86 World Cup.
Backs it up with experience.
I believe.
Yep. He's still got the lovable smirk of a cheeky chorister. And it doesn't matter how old he gets. He's still got it. The smirk is cheeky. He looks like a boy who's been caught with his hand in the jam jar.
As boys so often are.
And you're like, you know what? Help yourself to another handful of jam, Gary. Because that smirk, you know what I mean? I don't care. Just keep shoveling Britain's jam into your pockets. And keep taking all that national jam that...
Keep smirking.
And ultimately, if it means we give less jam to Gary Neville, that's probably quite a good thing.
That's probably better.
Yeah.
No, I do think that... For the salt and vinegar... Yeah,
I've heard this theory before from...
Walker's Crisp. It's perfection. It's so thin. I mean, how they slice the potatoes that thin, it's beyond me. But they're so thinly sliced to maximise, obviously, the fat per square unit of starch. Each starch molecule has, I mean, it's like rats on a ham. If you like, each of those starch molecules is swarming with fat molecules. They're squashed onto it from every angle, aren't they? So they've maximized it. So it's more fat than it is. If you can imagine a molecule covered in other molecules, it's like that. But it's more fat than it is.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Starch, if you know what I mean. Like, it's got more topping than it has thing that the topping's on. It's almost like you've put so much butter onto a bit of bread that there's no bread left. There's just butter held in the shape of a slice of bread. You know what I mean? That's what it is. It's pure salty fat. And it just melts in your mouth, but it's crispy. It's incredible.
I understand what you mean, but I disagree. I like a bit of heft in the crisp. I like it.
Oh, do you?
I like to have to really crunch through it.
Okay.
Yeah, give it a crunch, do you?
Whereas a Walker's one just disappears in your mouth, really.
Well, it's like a fatty snowflake. Each one is unique.
Yeah.
Each one lands on your tongue. It takes a bit longer to dissolve than a snowflake does, but I'll still stand there on Christmas Day.
Crushing it up and making a man out of it.
Making a crisp man.
I'll make a crisp man. I'll make a crisp angel in the garden.
Yeah, you'll have a crisp ball fight.
Crisp ball fight.
Neighbours.
So, the kettle's crisp is much more hefty. Is that what you... Or the Pringle?
Well, the Pringle's not... No, Pringle's not that hefty. Pringle's more about...
No.
Pringle's more the dissolving situation, isn't it?
Yeah, Pringle, you can take your dentures out for your Pringles if you want.
Pringles are American, aren't they?
Yes.
And they were designed in World War II because they had a lot of spare canisters. The American GIs had a lot of spare canisters. I mean, we all know the story.
Yeah, old artillery shells that hadn't exploded. Yeah. And they rained down on the cities of Hamburg and Dresden to demoralise the local population.
That's right.
Who became so sluggish after eating so many Pringles, they just wanted to give in.
Exactly.
And I think they're one of those things where, under EU law, they can't be called a crisp because there's not enough food in it.
Oh, really? Oh, God.
To be called a food stuff, like, it has to be... It's like a cleaning product or a, you know...
I tell you what, there's probably more nutrition in the actual canister that they come in. But for me, that is the Ford. It's the Ford motor car, isn't it? Of salt snacks. For me, you look at it. It's like a conveyor belt. I mean, literally, look at it. Each one is exactly the same. Pringle, identical Pringle, identical Pringle, identical Pringle, identical.
and they come out of the canister like they come off a conveyor belt. So it's automation, mass production approach, that American approach to Christmas. Whereas for me, the British Christmas, each one is unique. It's more like, so
you're a sort of crisp Luddite. You're sort of you support the artisan.
Well, it's the old ways.
The artisans in the Walker's factory who are individually carving slices of potatoes.
Exactly. Each one is individually
assigned.
Carved. Each crisp will be lived with the crisp meister for several years, isn't it? Before it's
yeah, yeah, and blessed by the crisp droids,
and each one is different and unique.
Mm.
And yeah, call me old fashioned, but I quite like that. Whereas you're sort of more in the nozzle universe, aren't you? With a Pringles canister, you think about the canister; it is essentially a nozzle. It's
reminding you of the nozzle.
It's reminding me of the nozzle.
I've looked it up here. So Pringles are made, of course, by that wonderful culinary tradition of Procter and Gamble, who also, of course, make Persil. And
it's so lovely, is it? Just two simple, you know, oh, Billy Procter and
industrial chemists,
and Jeff Gamble, just two simple industrial chemists
sorting your pre-dinner snacks
with a lust for global domination.
So this is a news story from 2008. The High Court judged that the popular snack are not a crisp. And are indeed closer to a cake or a biscuit.
What, Pringles?
Yeah, because in order to be classed as a crisp and something to do with VAT as a result, it needs to be more than 50% potato. So it needs to be being able, you have to legally say that it's made from potato, but you can't say that about a Pringle. You can't say it's made from...
You can't just say it's made in a factory where there was a potato at the time.
Yeah. And that's when you have to bring in a friendly mustachioed sort of mascot character, isn't it?
Yes. You've got to sell it.
You've got to sell it on the fictive being. Because when a human is trying to interpret a human face, so the human eye and brain is attuned to recognize a face. That's why we see faces everywhere. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you'll see a face.
Sometimes, you know, in the face of a baby, you'll see a face.
sometimes in a plate of mash, you know, anything, you can see a or at the back of a car, the front of a car, a bin, yeah. You know, you see faces.
A mossy rock.
Mossy rock. So when you're looking at that Pringles canister, you're not thinking about what the fuck is a Pringle. You're thinking about, who's that guy? And he looks like quite...
Well, he's got a face. He must be all right.
He must be all right. He's got a face.
I assume he's some kind of Victorian strongman.
Some sort of Victorian strongman. He's got a moustache, which suggests sort of authority.
Yeah.
He's
or deviancy, or both.
Or deviancy, or both. He's smiling, so you just sort of think this is okay.
Yeah, so the potato content of a Pringle is 42%.
Okay. I mean, that's not that bad. What's the potato content of a potato in the first place?
Good question.
Do you know what I mean? So 42%, that's better than I thought it would be.
It's a fail though, isn't it?
It's still a fail.
Yeah. Potato exam.
Yeah. Well, what does it have to be? 50?
If it's over 50, you can say it's made from potato.
Rather than made on a potato or near a potato.
Inspired by a potato.
Yeah.
Based on a true potato.